Talk with Maria Bailey. Join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. From the cradle to college, Maria and her expert guests offer information, tips, and tools to make the busy lives of families easier. Now, here's your host, Maria Bailey.
Welcome to Mom Talk Radio. I'm Ellen Jacobs, and I'm filling in for Maria Bailey. I have known Maria for several years, and we have worked on many projects together, some as a mom and others work-related. So when she asked me to fill in for her today, I was honored and very excited. So I'm glad to be here today. And I thought I would start off by just telling you a little bit about myself. I am a mother of three grown girls, 24, 22, and 20. And yes, having them 2 years apart back in the day, we had a very busy household. And believe it or not, we're still very busy, just in a different way. Two of my daughters are in college, and one has just graduated. And, you know, whether your child is 2 or 22, they are always still your baby. As a parent, we're always teaching and guiding and loving and, you know, ultimately preparing them to one day leave the nest. Go out on their own, you know, be a good person, contribute to our society. So guess what? In August, one of my babies is flying the nest. Moving out of state, she is leaving us. So where does that put me as a mother? Well, very proud, very happy, but, you know, kind of sad because, well, I'm going to miss that little baby I affectionately refer to as Bear. Because Bear's moving out, which I now enter my latest transition of a mother, adjusting to her living somewhere else, which is my new normal. One of my girlfriends and I always call or text or get together to help guide us through difficult mom times. And we talk about what's happening in our lives and always refer to our adjustment as the new normal. Because part of being a mom is adapting to when your child is where your child is now, what they need, how we can help them grow. Last week, Maria told us about her son getting married, letting him go, and her becoming a mother-in-law. Our role as a parent is forever changing, whether it's their first step, new school, moving away, we're continually adapting to our new normal. And that's what makes us great at what we do, becoming a mom. So today we have some great guests with a lot of interesting things, information to tell us. We have Dr. Michelle Borba, author of the book on Selfie, Stephanie Wolf, Bernadette Knoll, Dr. Liz Mathias, Lolly and Yo-Yo. Lots of great stuff coming our way. And before we get started, I have a little spot from our sponsor, Premama. Premama, makers of the prenatal vitamin powder you can drink, has just launched a new product called Digestive Aid. It's a delicious vanilla caramel-flavored chew that supports immune function and may also ease constipation, bloating, and other minor digestive discomforts associated with pregnancy. Each chew contains 2 grams of dietary fiber and 1 billion plus CFUs of probiotics, which have shown through research to help maintain a healthy intestinal balance. The vegetarian, naturally flavored chews can be eaten 1 to 4 times daily and are available in packs of 28. Go to drinkpremama.com for information and where to buy it. And when we return, we will be joined by our guest, Dr. Michelle Borba.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome back. And I would like to introduce our first guest, Dr. Michelle Borba. She is the author of Unselfie, Why Empathetic Kids Succeed in Our All About Me World. She is an educational psychologist and former teacher who has worked with parents and teachers on 4 continents. She is the award-winning author of 22 books translated into 14 languages. And Dr. Borba currently resides in Palm Springs, California, with her husband and is the mother of three grown sons. And I'd like to welcome Dr. Borba to our show.
Oh, thank you so much. This is one of my favorite shows.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. It's so nice to have you today.
Yeah, thank you.
This new book on selfie, Why Empathetic Kids Succeed in Our All About Me World, very, very interesting to me, especially because in today's, cultural society, everything that's going on and just the selfie rage and people being empathetic. Please tell me a little bit more about this book because it just sounds very interesting.
Well, thank you. This is a 10-year process of writing it. It started, though, when I looked at one statistic that just floored me, and that is over the last 30 years, they've been giving incoming college freshmen a narcissism inventory. And in the last 30 years, what they're discovering is our incoming college freshmen, thousands of them, have dropped 40% in empathy, while narcissism has increased 58%. That is a big concern because empathy, the seeds of empathy, are all about how we really raise our kids to be happy. It's the seeds of good relationships, resilience, success, really in a classroom, as well as the best way you can now get an employment job in the real life world because they're looking for people who can step into clients' shoes. And that's what empathy is all about. On selfie is the answer, though. It's got over 300 research-based strategies, simple ways to flip this around so we raise our kids who have strong minds as well as caring hearts.
Yes, it seems as though it's, today it's hard to get them to think about not just themselves and to promote kindness. So how do you teach empathy to kids that are used to, thinking all about themselves?
Well, the first thing is I viewed schools all over the world to get the best strategies. And one third grader gave me the best tip. He said, empathy is a verb, you know. And I looked at him and said, what does that mean? He goes, well, you don't learn it on a worksheet. And I went, you are right on. The best way to help your child learn empathy is give them real meaningful experiences or let them witness it. So first step is easiest one. Tune up your own caring capacity so your child sees you being caring, making cookies and bringing to the neighbor next door because she's sick, or calling your friend and hearing them eavesdrop that you're concerned on what can you do to make them feel better. Read emotionally charged literature with your kids. Research now says those books like Charlotte's Web and Stone Fox, you need, Kleenex to get through. But the research says they not only make our kids smarter, but also nicer. They activate your kids' heart. Or you can make little things like a habit of just being caring in your own household. My girlfriend had a great strategy. It was called the two kind rule. Every day you walk out of this house, remember, you're going to say or do at least two kind things to somebody. And at nighttime, we're going to talk about it. Well, our girls are now in their 30s, and they're three of the kindest kids you could possibly imagine, just because her mother helped them practice kindness until they developed a caring mindset. Those are the kinds of strategies that work best. It's making it repetitive so they really embed it, they understand why it works, and they can do it alone without us giving them guidance.
Very true. Role models are huge. And if we can set that example for our children, they just pattern after that as they grow into adults of their own. How do you think you encourage this kindness revolution? I mean, how do we get everybody on board with this?
Thank you for the question. First of all, I've been touring all over the country right now. I'm on my way to Dallas. I just got back from Chicago. Austin's next. And in every place I go, parents are coming out in just hordes because it really is resonating. What they're doing is they're just starting little change maker groups of moms or dads sitting down together and talking about over wine and cheese or whatever, how do we raise kind kids? And the first thing is if you're intentional and you find like-minded parents, it'll work. Second of all, get kids to do this. They are wonderful kids out there, but if we can join kids together, maybe during the summer, and get kid care clubs going, or a couple of tweens together and find out what their passion is, have them join forces together, and maybe they're going to work in a shelter, but maybe it's nothing more than delivering books to that they collect from the neighbors to deliver to just a homeless group of kids. Doesn't make any difference what it is. Find what resonates with your own child. Start finding those little ways in your own community The most fun thing I did when I was researching this book was interview about 500 kids who I considered to be change makers, just ordinary kids who were doing extraordinary things. And I'd always ask, how'd you get that way? And they said, my mom or my dad just encouraged me because they knew that I was concerned about if it was cyberbullying or the lonely kids out on the playground. And we just brainstorm of what I could do to make a difference. And doggone it, I'm really doing it. I really am making a difference. And you could see this passion in their hearts, but also they were getting what's really called a helper's high. There's nothing better than a child who realizes that really happiness is giving, not getting.
Those children that have a good role model, that is a start, but there's all these other children that are in situations where they maybe don't get that. And, you know, I guess we need these young people to be mentors and stand up and try and, you know, teach others?
Well, that's certainly one idea. When I was collecting data for this, literally I flew almost 1,000,000 miles around the world, from Rwanda to Armenia to across Canada to Colombia, collecting the best ideas. And some of the best ones were teachers who realized a child was at risk, who wasn't getting the good role modeling, but was connecting him with finding with another peer, or finding a way to help him make a difference in his own little world. And it was revolutionary in that child. It was actually transformational. It's called the moment of compassion and conversion. When a child finally realizes that they see themselves as a person who can do good, it changes their whole outlook of not only themselves, of the world, and it just changes their behavior because you act how you see yourself to be. And I think that's why a lot of our kids are handicapped, because we're not giving them opportunities to see themselves in a good light. We have narrowed our definition of success so much in this country to just a grade point average or an SAT score that we need to look at the other side of the report card and make sure that we're really starting to emphasize compassion and kindness and empathy, because it's all teachable.
Dr. Barbara, this book sounds like it's going to help change the world, and it sounds wonderful. We appreciate you coming today, and thank you very much. When we return, we are joined by Bernadette Knoll. Welcome back, and I would like to introduce our next guest, Bernadette Knoll. Bernadette is a writer, community collaborator, and author of the new book, Look at Us Now, A Creative Family Journal. She has called Austin home for the past 25 years, where she lives with her four children, Lucy, Otto, Esme, and Dean. And welcome, Bernadette, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks so much, Ellen. So happy to be here.
And we're happy to have you. I'm interested, very interested to hear about this book. I read some about it, and I love the whole idea of the journal. But why don't you start by just telling us what inspired you to write Look at Us Now?
Okay. Well, as the mother of four children, and as the mother of as any parent with more than one child knows, the first child's journal or baby book gets lots of information in it. And as each child is added to this family, that kind of gets smaller and smaller, the amount of time that we're able to add to our children's books. So I thought it would be really fun, instead of each child having their own book, that the family would have a journal that could be written in and serve as a tool for connection, both in the moment of filling it out and then later on down the road, serve as a little family memoir, filled with a lot of the day-to-day things, as opposed to the big events. The big events we remember, you know, the big birthdays and that kind of thing. Those we, our minds remember. But the little things, like how we do family dinner, what our Saturday mornings look like, all that kind of stuff can be captured in Look at Us Now. So I really wanted to help families find a way to both find connection in that and also have a place to put all those memories.
That is so true. And I really wish I would have done this with my three grown daughters as they were growing up, because you're absolutely right. It's the little moments that you forget, but can be so impactful or just make you smile or laugh or the funny things they used to say. So I really love the idea. You know, who do you think most benefits from working through this journal?
Well, interesting. I really think it's for families of all ages, and I'm not just saying that to sell more books. I do think it's great.
So I can still do it, you think, with my three grown children?
I think with your three grown children, it would be amazing. And I think with grandchildren, it would be amazing, too.
Ooh, yeah.
And I've also found it as a great tool for having conversations with my own teenagers. I took my daughter out to breakfast recently, just one-on-one, and we brought the book with us. And she flipped through and found a page that we could fill out together. And it just was fodder for some great conversation and let us get a little glimpse into each other that maybe we wouldn't have had otherwise. And I think the other thing in parenting is each moment that we're in, we think, oh, this is how it is and this is how it will always be. And yet if we look back on all the years, there's not one year that's like the year before. Things are changing constantly as our children get older and schools change and maybe neighborhoods. So I think taking the time, whether you do it with your children or if your kids are little and you take a few moments at the end of the day to sort of capture the little snippets and maybe even laugh at some of the things that made us crazy during the day.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's always laughter is always such a nice part of the day to just, mix in and brighten things up. What if someone doesn't consider themselves creative? Is this journal still for them?
Yeah, totally. The prompts are really simple and it can be filled in either just with words or for pre-writing children. It can be, pictures can be drawn in there. People can do it, do collage, whatever method works best for you. I like to doodle and I like to write. So for me, I add a little bit of both. But I know another friend of mine who's just doesn't consider herself creative at all. She just writes in each page. So whatever way works for your family. And it really is a great tool also for getting the kids involved in each other. I had a friend tell me, or a reader tell me, that she assigned the book to her 8-year-old one day, and it was his job to go around and interview his older siblings, to pick a page and then go around and get input from each of the siblings. So there's lots of ways it can be used and lots of ways that it can bring connection to a family.
Well, it sounds like it's a lot of fun and a great book, and we really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you for all the great information about your book. And again, it's Look at Us Now, A Creative Family Journal. Thank you, Bernadette. And when we come back, we are joined by Dr. Liz Mathias.
You succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
I would like to introduce our next guest and welcome Dr. Liz Mathias. She is a licensed clinical psychologist and certified physiologist who specializes in assisting children and their families with autism, ADHD, anxiety, and learning behavioral disorders. She has served with the public and private school setting for over 8 years. So please welcome, and we're glad to have you, Dr. Liz.
Hi, hello, and thank you for letting me join you again. How exciting.
Today I hear we're going to be discussing social engineering. Can you tell us what exactly or what is social engineering?
So social engineering is this new, I don't think it's new, but it's a new term for a concept that has been taking place for some time now, where parents have been working their children's social circles, meaning that they encourage play dates with certain children because they either like that child or they like the social group that the child is a part of or they like the parents, and as opposed to allowing our children to find their own friendships regardless of who that child is, what social groups they belong to, and whether or not we like the parents.
So it's something that I've been seeing a lot of in my own children kind of at school. I've been seeing it happen with the parents that I work with in my office. I've been hearing about this. Some are doing it, not even knowing they're doing it, and some are kind of the recipients of it. And it's it kind of goes against a little bit of how we grew up, just kind of letting friendships happen.
You know, Dr. Liz, I have to tell you, I've experienced that firsthand, and I never quite understood it, but it obviously is happening. And, you know, how do you think that impacts our children when the parent is so involved with social engineering?
Well, I think it really turns our children into less confident social creatures. Our kids aren't able to initiate the play dates because it's already happening for them. They don't necessarily match up with kids who are like them. You know, we find we naturally are attracted to other people who we befriend who have some kind of similarity to us or something we admire about someone else. And that's not necessarily happening for our kids. They're playing with the kids that we adults have chosen. And so, you know, we're just seeing a lot of kids who have difficulties developing friendships, maintaining friendships, understanding social cues, creating their social plans. And, you know, and it's something as simple as a kindergartner saying, can I play with Johnny? And it's really happening where kids are very scheduled. Well, you have a play date with Billy on Tuesday and this one is on this day and you're going to, and just, it's really just an adult maneuvering of the social world that should come very naturally.
Yeah. Then the children don't really end up with their true friends per se. You know, they may foster other relationships with other children, but they're not exactly choosing them, which, you know, I could see it being impactful in the long run. You know, what do you think that there's ways that we can avoid this social engineering?
I think as parents, as being open to who your child is naturally drawn to and encouraging those friendships as opposed to, you know, your child saying, I want to play with Johnny, and you thinking, well, I don't really like Johnny because he's not a cool kid, or he's nerdy, or he's goofy, or he has special needs. And I don't want you to play with that kid. How about Billy? You know, and how about a play date with Billy and then setting up a play date with Billy? But just letting our children, like, it's, your child wants to play with Billy or Samantha, you let them do it, as opposed to trying to maneuver and get your child placed in a certain group. And the one thing I do want to point out is sometimes our children do need help with it initially. You know, I kind of see it as being the model of holding your child on the bicycle with no training wheels. And you do have to hold their hands and give them the balance in the social world, but then at some point you do need to let go. And initially, our children are social creatures, but they don't really understand all the social norms and how to create play times and so forth. And so they do need our help. But again, at some point, we need to let go and then let them take over. So I don't think all social engineering is necessarily horrible. I think that it's just becoming a stronger phenomenon that I, you know, just read the term and I thought, oh my gosh, this is it. This is what I've been seeing. And I really didn't have a term for.
You know, my experience when I've seen children who've gone through social engineering as a younger child, it seems as though in high school is when they even struggle so much more because your parent isn't quite as involved in your plan making. And it seems like sometimes these children might struggle making their own plans socially.
Yeah, I agree with you, because at that point, the expectation is you should be able to do this on your own. I'm not going to do this anymore. I did it for you already. But if they weren't given the chance to do it when they were younger, they don't have the skill to do it when they're older. So, you know, we're doing our kids a disjustice by not giving them the opportunity to choose their friends, who they want to play with. And, you know, some kids want to have more play dates and some kids want to have fewer. And, you know, if you have a parent who's not in sync with your child, sometimes you have a very social child and a parent who's not as social. And so one play date a month is plenty for that parent, but not for the child. And sometimes you have a child who's not very social and a parent who is. And so you have a parent who's overly zealous in the number of play dates that are being scheduled, and a child who feels bombarded by them. So it's really watching what your child is cueing you with, and being aware of what your social style is and your social needs are as a parent, and what your children's social needs as well. So it's tough. You know, there's a lot of awareness that you have to have in order to understand where you and your child sit on this spectrum of sociability and being respectful of it.
It is tough. And in this day and age, so many things are planned out for children and all of us in general, that I do agree with you. It's a very fine line to draw as to, you know, how much do you really get involved?
Right. Right.
Right?
And, you know, it's again, looking at your child's cues, understanding your social style and your needs for social interaction versus your child.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Liz. This is a very interesting topic and conversation. And, you know, I think it brings light to a lot of situations in today's day. So thank you very much for joining us and sharing your thoughts with us. And coming up next, we have our Spotlight on Moms, and we are joined with Stephanie Wolf.
Let's have it again. Clean it up a little bit.
Yeah, thanks. Coming up next is our... Can I go again? All right. 3, 2, 1. Coming up next is our Spotlight on Moms, and we will be joined by Stephanie Wolf.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
I would like to introduce Stephanie Wolf. She is a mom of one child, I believe about 18 months old. She is a blogger and has a website, thevintagemodernwife.com, a fun family, faith, and food blog. And she can also be reached at Twitter at Matthews Bambina. So, Stephanie, welcome today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell me a little bit about what inspired you to become an advocate for wellness and self-care?
Absolutely. I have a daughter. Her name is Addie. And she actually was in the hospital for 10 months of her life. She was born with some genetic issues, and so we had a very long hospitalization. And in that time, I never wanted to leave her side, of course. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a social worker come and tell me, you know, you need to take care of yourself. You need to get out. You need to do more things for you, because the only way that you are going to be a good mother and helpful to your daughter is if you're good to yourself first. And so that really inspired me to want to become a self-care advocate for others and kind of spread that message along that it's very important to take care of yourself as a mom first in order to take care of your children.
That I couldn't agree with you more. If you're not taking care of yourself and happy with yourself, how are you possibly going to be very effective to those that need you the most, a young baby or any child for that matter? So that's great that social worker planted that seed in your mind, because it looks like it really worked and took off for you.
Absolutely. It really did. It completely changed my perspective on, you know, being a mother, and because mothers are selfless and we give everything to our children, and trying to learn to take care of myself was something I hadn't done before after having my daughter. So I love spreading the message and encouraging other moms to get out and do things they love. It's wonderful.
And, you know, just for mothers that are thinking about trying to get out and do more for themselves, you know, who watches the kids when moms have their self-care time? Because sometimes that can be a little bit of a struggle.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I have found very helpful is my husband. You know, dads are parents too. They're not babysitters. their parents. And that means sometimes you've got to switch off some time with the dads in order to get in that time that you want for yourself. So thankfully, I have a husband that is very supportive and loving, and he encourages me to get out when I need. And so I do that. But also, you know, if there is not a dad around, grandparents or a neighbor friend or a close friend, you know, I think people understand that moms need time too. And so they're more than happy to help out when they can.
Yes, I think you're right. I think we can all kind of relate to how a mom does need a break every now and then. And it's nice to hear that your husband's such a equal partner, and very good suggestion to just reach out to whomever you're comfortable with that might be able to help you with your children so you can take some time for yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, if you don't have time to yourself where you can get away, you don't have to get away necessarily. You know, sometimes I like to put a mask on and hop in the tub and just have that kind of time for myself as well when I can't get out.
You know, you read my mind. That was my next question to you. And you know, you've definitely started to answer it. You know, how can a mom with little spare time get self-care? So you're right. Just doing something at home for yourself can be very, rejuvenating.
Absolutely. Or inviting a girlfriend over to watch a movie after the kids have gone to bed. You know, mm-hmm. something as simple as that. Or I even have had such a sweet friend come and bring craft supplies. And we sit around and craft. That's our time for ourselves.
That's great. You know, spending time with friends and, getting in the bath, reading a book. It's very important that moms do take that time for themselves. So like you said, then they're, you know, a better caregiver for their children. Could you tell me a little bit more about your blog?
My blog is thevintagemodernwife.com, and I write about a multitude of different things. A lot of times it's about my daughter and her medical issues, and so we talk about her and relying on having faith because of that. I'll write about fun things that I'm doing, recipes that our family loves. It's really just an all-encompassing blog, just for that busy mom that, you know, just wants something fun to read.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. It is kind of nice to just have something fun to read. And also, you know, just sharing the medical issues that you're, you know, going through with your daughter. There's so many other families like yourself out there. And I think that that's very beneficial for them to, you know, share your story. So sounds like some great stuff. And again, it's thevintagemodernwife.com. And Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Have a great day. And when we return, we will be joined by Lolly and Yo-Yo. Yvonne Custers, fondly called Yo-Yo by kids, is the creator and founder of Let's Play Today, a fitness company that provides exciting children's fitness education to individuals around the world. And Larissa, Lolly Hopwood, has been performing for both children and grown-ups on well-respected stages for more than 16 years. So it's great to have you, Lolly and Yo-Yo. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. Yeah, we're glad to be here.
Yo-Yo, tell me a little bit about the book that you guys have collaborated on called Move.
We wrote this book, Move, together. It's based off of everything that we love to do in our live shows. We love to play, we love to read, we love to tell stories, and we thought it would be so much fun to put it into a book form so that way kids can read, but they also get to play with the book too. So it combines all of our favorite moves, gross motor skills, flexibility, balance, all put into some really fun moves. So kids get to actually ride it like a horse, they get to climb over it like a turtle shell, they get to balance and actually stand on the book too. like a flamingo. So lots of fun things and actions, which is a lot of fun, and kids really enjoy doing it.
It sounds like it's a lot of fun. And Lally, how did you guys make this leap into incorporating this reading experience? Because, you know, we have music and we have fitness. And how did the book come about?
You know, it's funny. I've been doing kids' story times for about 15, 16 years with little ones. And together, you know, we were writing the records, too. It seemed like a kind of a natural progression. We were thinking it'd be really fun for the kids to have something that they could hang on to and take home that would kind of put what we do in our shows into a book. My ex had connections with Workman, and it just kind of happened. It was just kind of fate. We had a couple of different ideas too. It's just kind of funny how the original things that you kind of start off with can kind of morph into the end result or the final product. So that's, we really saw that happening with Workman.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a little time to evolve. Like, you guys had these two great ideas that you put together and then put it into a book, and it sounds like it's a lot of fun for kids.
Yeah, it's been really great. This is Yo-Yo. We've been visiting multiple cities. We just got back from Seattle and San Francisco, and before that we were in Miami, close to you guys, I think, actually.
Yeah.
And then Ohio and North Carolina. So we were getting kids all across the country up and moving and playing at the same time.
Well, I know, you know, we're always trying to get the kids up and moving and away from computers and televisions and get them a little bit back into more free play. And this sounds like a great avenue for it. Lally, you know, how is this book different? How is Move different from other board books that are available for children?
This definitely gets the kids moving in a very different way. Each page asks the children to do a certain move, invites them to do that. When we were writing the book, we had kids that we were testing it out on. We were testing it out on my daughter, who's 7 now. She was about 5 when we started writing the book. And a lot of her friends, a lot of kids at the story time. So because it has handles, it has a hole in the middle, it invites the kids to jump over the book instead of just, you know, suggesting that they move a certain way. It asks the kids to stand on the book or to push the book instead of just suggesting that they make the movements instead. So when we started it, we wanted to look at it more as a toy than as a book. But, of course, the written words and everything like that really draw the kids in, combine the play and the reading. So, yeah.
It sounds kind of like a one-of-a-kind and a lot of fun for kids. Yo-Yo, what inspired you to become advocates of play? Because you were involved in fitness, and, you know, what was the inspiration behind this book?
For us, you know, I think music moves people. And for us, when we combine our shows, which is storytelling and exercise and fun and exploration, it's what we love to do. I think we love to do it. It's our birthright as kids to play, and I think it continues on. And as adults, I think we all need a little bit more play in our life. And there's so many benefits of exercising and moving, not only on our body and for our health, but it goes beyond. Just, it gives us a mood boost. You know, we feel fantastic. Mm-hmm. We're happy. We can't, you know, wait to just continue doing our day. And, you know, seeing all the smiles in kids' faces, it's just, it's so much fun what we get to do. So beyond that, we also know that there's all this academic performance that kids are doing so much better when they get to exercise and move and play and not only interact with what they're learning, but really get involved in a much more physical way. So this is something that I've always loved doing as a kid. I've been very active as an adult, and I feel very fortunate that, you know, Lally and I get to move and play and do this as, you know, we don't even like to call it our job because it's a lot of fun. So
It sounds like a lot of fun. So, you know, thank you both, Lally and Yo-Yo, for joining us. And the book Move, check it out. It sounds like a lot of fun. Thank you all for joining us. And I hope you received some good information from our very interesting guest. And Maria will be back next week. And remember to visit us at momtalkradio.com and on Facebook.